Many Black Americans feel left out of conversations about migration stories. However, many Black Americans have individual stories pertaining to the Great Migration. Indigo Mays learns about the story of her great-great-grandmother, Rosie Short Robinson, as told through her grandmother, Carol Chisholm.
So, my introduction to the Great Migration was after my mother had brought me to an art exhibit by Jacob Lawrence. There, I saw a painting of many families packed into a train car. My mother leaned over and whispered to me, saying that our family had been part of the Great Migration.
I never really got to meet her. She had passed, actually, when my father was a child, and they didn't know why she died because there were no doctors that would see Black families at that time.
Rosie was probably born in Bogalusa, Louisiana, in the late 1890s, though we aren't completely sure. Rosie lived there during the era of Jim Crow, a time in which Black people weren't slaves, but were still treated as second-class citizens. As my grandmother recalled the reality of Rosie, she sat in a comfy office surrounded by books, something Rosie could only dream of. Black residents of Bogalusa were subservient to their white counterparts, so Rosie worked as a maid for white families and had little choice when it came to her work. Once, when she had tried to quit, the white woman she had worked for forced Rosie and her child, who was only a couple of years old, to wash all of the curtains.
If she had refused, then she could have been beaten. And what they would do, sometimes they had paddy rollers, but they were really young guys who would just roll through the Black community. And if they heard of an insult, then they would find the person who was allegedly insulting someone in the white community, and they would tie them to a tree in the middle of the community and whip them.
Rosie tried to give her three children the best life she could, but it was difficult given the conditions of poverty, racism, and being a single mother. Many Black Americans were already moving north, like Rosie's husband, who had moved to Youngstown for the steel mills. But the thing is, white people made it difficult to just up and leave. Losing out on almost free labor to them was unimaginable.
And what she did was pretend that she was going to visit relatives in Mississippi. And she packed her clothes only enough to take a trip. She sold some of her furniture to people that she could trust. And then she caught the train to Mississippi.
There were still many trials in Ohio, and racism didn't just disappear after leaving the South. Rosie died a few years after moving to Youngstown because of the lack of health care. Many doctors didn't even see Black families at the time. But her decision to move her family north still moved on. Her daughter was able to finish the eighth grade. Her youngest son was able to finish high school. And her oldest son, Carol's Uncle Willie, was able to join the Army, making a career out of working in supply depots. From what my grandma had heard, Rosie was a good mother. She raised three kids largely on her own, showing them love and care for their entire lives. Her kids continued her love by housing other Black families from the Great Migration. Carol can still remember those seeking refuge.
And all of the people who lived there, I used to call aunts and uncles, because you were respectful to older people, and they were all your aunt or your uncle.
Rosie Short Robinson's spirit still lingers around my family today, even though none of us ever got to meet her. The monumental decision to move north affected the trajectory of our family, but so did her persistence, a persistence that has remained intact for generations.
Even now, our family has a history of women who have always worked outside of the home. We've had a history of women who were creative and artistic and who were able to, who had a strong sense of efficacy and being able to make good things happen for their family.
From Radioactive, this is Indigo Mays.